Welcome back, college basketball fans, to Hoops HD's continuing coverage of the 2019-2020 season. This is our weekly Hoops HD report that we're recording around 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern on Monday, December 9th. I'm your host, yes. Chad Sherwood.
So all the big games on tonight, we will probably not be able to get to. It's 9 o'clock on Monday.
I got John Tytel down here on the screen. I got David Griggs beside me. John Salika joining us as well. Four of us going for the show tonight. And, David mentioned that there's actually one game for each of us tonight. We can each just talk about one of the four games
that's been scheduled. 15 minutes on each of the four games tonight.
But this is the show where we go over all the news and notes going on in college basketball and on the court, and lots of stuff to get through tonight. So I think we should just get right into it, David, unless you have some mindless banter you want to start with.
There's four games tonight. What a dead night. Not even on, I mean, only during the Diamond Head are there this few games.
All right, let's get to it then. And let's not talk about what's going on tonight, because nobody wants to talk about Alcorn State's win over Russell.
The only
College.
Thing that's going on tonight is studying for exams and cramming for papers.
I never understood what exams had to do with basketball and why we had to stop.
Yeah, because a student athlete isn't – well, that could be a whole show, and we're not going to do that tonight. Yeah. But let's go into what's been going on in the court. And I want to start tonight in the West Coast Conference. Well, David, let me start with you. Last night we saw Gonzaga go to Washington, and while the game was close the whole way, they led the whole way. And I was really impressed by the Zags here, now up to sixth in the nation in both bowls.
Yeah, I kind of wish that Rocco was here with his ties to Washington. But, they led tip to buzzer, but it was really exciting the whole way. And it was kind of a gutsy showing. This game has a little bit of a heat – well, a lot of heat to it. And every time Washington went on a run and the crowd got nuts and it looked like they were going to counterpunch, they couldn't. Gonzaga would go on another run to counter it and stay ahead. And, combine this with their win away from home against Oregon down in that tournament, Gonzaga putting together a really nice resume. They do have the blowout loss to Michigan. But all in all, Gonzaga once again looking like a team that's going to land on the top two lines and maybe contend for an Elite Eight or a Final Four again. And this is a year that we thought – they were sort of rebuilding, I think.
Well, I don't know that they ever rebuild, but Tytel, let me ask you here. They lost to Michigan. It was the third game in 3 days. It was a blowout, and they've got your Arizona team coming up this week here. So I figured I'd let you get a few seconds in on Mark Few's squad as well.
They look great. It's tough to win in Washington, but when you have your five starters scoring in double figures, that's a good recipe for success. Also helps that Washington is young, but I would not give up all hope on the Huskies just yet. Coach Few is great. Sean Miller will have his hands full this weekend, as will the three starting freshmen he has. I think that Arizona and Gonzaga are developing a nice little rivalry out west. So as much as I like to schedule cupcakes to win, it's important to schedule the big boys. And I'm certainly glad that it's in Tucson, because that might make all the difference.
Yeah, I believe that was also the seventh straight win by Gonzaga against a Pac-12 team.
Yeah.
They're going for eighth this week, and then they got North Carolina right after that. So what next two games for the Zags, huge, David, absolutely huge.
Yeah, this Gonzaga-Washington series, I think next year is the last year on the contract. It was a four-year deal after the series went dormant for a while. Gonzaga, I believe, has won 12 of the last 13. So, I mean, they've been absolutely dominant. But with that in mind, are we all in agreement we want to see this continue? Like, we want this to be a fixture game. I think it needs to be. It should be. It would be stupid for it to go dormant again.
I don't know. Maybe a more local rival like Idaho would be better, but yeah.
Really wouldn't.
Stalik, let me ask about the team on the right-hand side there. The St. Mary's Gales got their – I guess it was a 10-point loss to Dayton, but it was really about a 30-point deficit they were at. Dayton, we're going to get to it in a minute here, but St. Mary's, add to that the home loss to Winthrop, a little disappointed after the Wisconsin win to start.
Honestly, this is a game I stopped following after about 10 minutes to go in the second half, just because the Flyers were piling on right here. That's really the second test, the first test they failed, when you consider that Winthrop was supposed to be a bye game, but managed to slip up. I mean, losing a Cal, that's certainly not going to be an option. Now you look at games like Arizona State, Nevada, Seattle. those are all must wins before you go into West Coast Conference play now, because it's not just Gonzaga they have to keep an eye on. They have to keep an eye on San Francisco. You got to keep an eye on Santa Clara, who's also been off to a hot start themselves.
Yeah,
but the problem's going to be here is where do they, if they can't beat Gonzaga, where are they going to get the big wins? They're going to have one win at the end of the season, the Wisconsin game.
Yeah, and how good is that going to be? Greg Gard and company, we'll talk about them when we get to the Big Ten, but that win losing a lot of its glitter. And I agree, winning at Cal, you need something a lot better than that to hang your hat on. Arizona State on a neutral court, or is that at St. Mary's?
I don't know that Arizona State game is. It's a neutral court game, though.
Okay, it is. So – like that would be, I mean that would be something a little better. But yeah, like you're right. Their margin for error is conceivably going to be pretty narrow if they don't have any like signature wins out of conference better than Whiskey, which may not even be an NCAA tournament team. They're not looking at right now.
Tito, let me ask you, because there's another team up there on top of the cities. What about the Santa Clara? Should we paying attention to them?
I think you kind of have to, even though 9-2 in December is perfectly mediocre for some teams. I think it's great for Santa Clara. They just destroyed Cal by 19 on Saturday. Obviously, that says more about Cal, I think, than about Santa Clara. They're David's ultimate home court hero, though. Their only two losses were on the road at Stanford and at Nevada. They do have four cupcakes ahead all at home, so they should be 13-2 entering the new year. And then they have the road trip to hell next month. Three in a row at San Francisco, at St. Mary's, at Gonzaga. Those three teams are combined 27-5 right now. So good luck to Coach Sendek. He's coming off of three straight seasons with 15 or more losses, and his current team is not a great three-point shooting team, but they kick butt inside over 56% from inside the arc, and no senior in the rotation. So next year it could be even better. Two great international big men, 6'11", Guglielmo Caruso from Italy, and 6'9", Josef Rankic from Toronto. Somehow these two guys, 6'11 and 6'9, they're both shooting 43% from behind the arc. So there's a lot of pieces, and Herb Sendek knows how to coach them.
Got the upcoming schedule in the West Coast Conference on the screen here. We already mentioned Gonzaga's and St. Mary's games. But David, BYU coming off of the loss in the Holy War to Utah, is hosting Nevada and then playing Utah State. I believe that game is in Salt Lake City on Saturday. Big week for BYU if they've got any chance of getting back into the discussion with four losses already on the year.
Yeah, really big, especially like you said. I mean, sort of there really needs to be a sense of urgency to these games. BYU's had opportunities. They've played well at times. They haven't played well at others. I realize that the Holy War is an intense rivalry, but Utah has not shown any signs of – if you're a tournament team, you're expected to win that game, I think, even though it was a road game, they didn't. If you pull them up, they've just had several incidents where they needed to answer the bell and just not pass the test. Now, they've got you know, they're going to continue to be challenged. They have these opportunities coming up, but having them and cashing them in are two completely different things.
Yeah, the two Gonzaga, the two St. Mary's games during conference play are looming huge now, too.
Yeah. In Nevada playing a lot better. We'll get to them and Utah State here in a little bit. But you kind of get the feeling there is a sense of urgency going into this week for BYU. Those are two really big games.
Well, let's roll over. We've got a lot more to get through. I know we spent a lot more time we normally do on the West Coast Conference. Let's swing back over to the Big Ten here. It was ACC Big Ten Challenge Week last week. The Big Ten coming up with the 8-6 victory. Salika, let me start with you here. On top of that, on top of the ACC Big Ten, we also started Big Ten conference play over the weekend. You know, what did you see out of the Big Ten? Because there's one team that I was very impressed with this over the course of this week. And
yeah, that would have to be the Ohio State University when you consider what they did to North Carolina and then Penn State. It looked like it was going to be a bit of a close game, but then Lamar Stevens fouls out and what was a 9-point game becomes a 32-point ass kicking.
Yeah, and you've got here this Ohio State team, David, unbelievably impressed with what they did at Carolina. They're now number two and number three in the two polls of the nation, and there's an argument they should be number one.
Yeah, I mean, a real big argument. That's a high-caliber win on the road. Now, it's their only road game so far, but holy crap. And when you look at just how much this team has improved since the beginning of the year, if you watch that first game against Cincinnati, you know how much better this team is looking now than they did in that one. But when you look at the Big Ten, you've got Ohio State going on the road and blasting North Carolina. You got Michigan getting the big wins on the neutral floor. You got Purdue, who perhaps underappreciated, with a really strong profile right now and some really good wins. These teams have gone out and earned their spots. They didn't really move up by default as everybody else got beat. Like, you know, Maryland, maybe not as accomplished as the other ones, but still really good. A nice win against Temple and some other stuff too. But when you look at, I mean, I know Ohio State's the one you want to talk about, but look at what Michigan has done and Purdue have done as well in this league.
Well let's say we've talked about the team that's 2/3 in the polls. Tytel, what about the team that's number 4 in both polls? Maryland undefeated on the season.
Terps are really impressing me. They barely beat Illinois and probably should have lost last Saturday at the Xfinity Center. They were down 15 in the second half. And I have to say, Illinois choked it away. As much as I want to give credit to an undefeated Terps team, Illinois had the ball at the end and just blew it, and then fouled and gave up a 3 and all that stuff. But let's focus on the positives. So they did escape, and the Terps are great at a couple things. One, the interior defense, top 10 in the nation. You cannot score inside the arc, under 40% from two-point range. Schedule's amazing. They've not played like the top of the top, but very impressive non-conference schedule. Rhode Island, Temple, Marquette, Notre Dame. 4 of their next 5, Penn State, Seton Hall, Indiana, and then possibly a matchup of 14-0 teams when they host the Buckeyes on January 7th. Wouldn't that be fantastic? One reason for their success, among many, many reasons, they have a 6-foot senior point guard, Anthony Cowan. He runs the show. He knows what he's doing. He's got a bunch of size around him. It's not like he's passing to his 6'2 shooting guard or his 6'7 power forward. He's got 6'5 and 6'6 in the backcourt, 6'10 in the front court. His team is legit, despite the fact that they should have lost to Illinois, and I think that they can keep it going. I don't think this is a Final Four team, even though they are that good right now and undefeated, but certainly should do some damage in March, which they've had problems doing in the recent past.
If you're hitting a 3-pointer from 40 feet like Cowan did during Illinois, it's probably your year.
Yeah, but when you go beyond Maryland, Ohio State, Michigan, we talked about them a lot last week. They had the loss to Louisville, but I don't think that's anything to sneeze at. Michigan State and Purdue, which we already both mentioned. But Sleek, let me ask you this. Beyond those top 4 or 5 teams, you kind of hold your nose at the rest of the conference. There's nobody that impressed you even. I mean, Indiana 8-1, but they got run out of the building by Wisconsin over the weekend.
Well, that's the problem. Both Indiana and Wisconsin are both home court heroes. The Badgers, they've had nice wins against Marquette and Indiana, but nothing outside of Madison. Same story for Indiana. Bunch of bye games. Nice win against Florida State, but they just creamed themselves when they went up to Wisconsin.
We could be looking at a league with 4, David, even maybe 5 protected seeds in it, and nobody else in the field.
Right, yeah, I mean, it could shape out that way. Speaking of not looking good, with Mini right now getting blasted by an Iowa team that's, been so-so but not real good. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, there is a cliff between the 5th team and the 6th team right now.
The upcoming schedule is up there on the screen, including Michigan at Illinois, Maryland at Penn State. We got Iowa State coming up Thursday night. A few other games, Seton Hall, Rutgers, and Ohio State at Minnesota. Some big games coming up this next week as well. But let's kind of take a look at the other half of that ACC Big Ten challenge. We mentioned the Big Ten winning the event. The ACC, of course, lost it. Only picking up 6 wins, and then went into conference play themselves. David, let me start with you here. Was there anything that you took away from these games, and especially do you want to discuss what happened on Sunday with Virginia and North Carolina?
It was 2-0
5 minutes into the game. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, and you had a – I don't remember if this was a tweet or the email, but it was great. It was like, I'm glad Virginia does not do Silent Night. The kids would never get onto the court. Yeah.
No, like, it was both email and Twitter.
Okay, yeah. But, kind of a rock fight, but Virginia getting the big win. North Carolina, just kind of talking about them, they're mounting up the losses, but is it really something to be that concerned about? Perhaps they're not top 10 good, but they're still very, very good. And
before you go any further past that, Carlisle, Tytel, do you want to answer that question, Tim, for him?
Yes, so a couple things. Number one, they lost so much last year, both in graduating guys like Luke May and hotshot freshmen like Kobe White, that it's impossible to just reload automatically, especially when you have this ridiculous schedule. I can't think of four games in a row that anybody's played this year when you look at Michigan, Oregon, Ohio State, Virginia, with only one of those at home. That's like one of the toughest strength of schedules in the nation, as you see on the board here, where their strength of schedule is 21. Thank you.
Yes.
So the fact that they have a trip to Spokane coming up next week is not going to make it any easier, obviously. The reason for some hope is, number one, Armando Bacot is hurt with the left ankle injury. So if he comes back and is healthy, that improves the team immensely. The fact that Cole Anthony's scoring is going down and his turnovers are going up is of concern, but he's a freshman point guard, so I think that that's to be expected. The team is not shooting well. They need to make threes and make their free throws. They're both bottom 300 in the nation in those two categories. That's something you can teach. That's something you can work on. If they keep being a poor shooting team, they're going to keep being a bubble team. But I'm not going to throw in the towel when you have that kind of schedule and an injury and losing so much from last year.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Like, you know, while they have losses, none of them are damaging at all. So, I mean, you know, their ceiling and their expectations can still be pretty good. I basically agree with everything Tytel just said.
Well, David, let me ask you about the other half of that awful game on Sunday between Carolina and Virginia. Virginia did that after getting, you know, crushed at Purdue in the ACC Big Ten Challenge.
Yeah, Virginia just doesn't have the offensive weapons that they had a year ago. Not that you would have considered them a great offensive team last year, but they could at least produce. This year they can't. I mean, they have a suffocating defense, but, you know, they can't shoot. They don't really have anybody that's a go-to outside shooter anyway, and they're just not going to produce or manufacture the way that they did in the past. They're still going to win a lot of games. I don't think that they're Final Four good. But, yeah, I mean, they did. They got the win against North Carolina, and as eye-gouging as it may have been to watch, it was a pretty big win on paper.
And their schedule is kind of interesting here, because I don't know that they have any significant challenges other than maybe the game at Florida State until the month of February. You know, they've got Louisville twice, and Duke and Carolina again when we get to February, but the next month and a half should be a lot easier for Virginia than we normally see.
Virginia Tech could still be a bit of a trap for them.
It's a home game, though, so the road game isn't until February again. But, Stalica,
what then again, what do I know? I mean, wasn't there a year where they lost to Virginia Tech and still managed to get to number one?
I believe so, yes. Stalica, with regard to the let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here in the ACC, actually. There's a few interesting games, beginning with tomorrow night in the Jimmy V Classic, when Louisville is playing what might be an undermanned Texas Tech team, but... So I expect to win. I don't know if you have a different call on that.
Well, Texas Tech did look a bit better against DePaul, but ended up coming short. And I think that made a three-game losing streak for them. But another game to also keep an eye on, UCLA going to Notre Dame. Will the Bruins be able to stop a bleeding and actually get a win of significance right there? Because the Irish are suddenly 0-2 in the ACC themselves and digging an early hole.
I thought you were going to mention Xavier Wake Forest as well.
We'll get to that when we get to the Big East.
Okay, we'll get to that at the Big East. We do have a Big East game on Saturday, though, Tytel, Syracuse-Georgetown.
I'm awaiting my approval of a press credential, I hope, and I will be there. And I think a week ago it looked like a horrible game for both teams. Now that Syracuse is scoring 90 a game and Georgetown is having this addition by subtraction, it could actually be a nice little game, a reminder of the rivalry of the days gone by when they were both in the Big East.
Yeah. Let's flip over to the Big East since Lika teased it already. And Tata, let me stick with you here and talk about the team that finally suffered its first loss of the season at home to Buffalo, the mighty DePaul Blue Demons.
I wish that they were still undefeated because that makes the story a lot better. But 9-1 is 9-1, and it was a 5-point loss. Blame DePaul for this one, though. 7 of 18 from the free throw line. They deserve to lose. Solid schedule. This isn't a bunch of cupcakes. This is Iowa, Minnesota, Texas Tech. Very impressive. They have a couple more cupcakes ahead, and they host Northwestern, so they could be 12-1. then the bad news. They start conference play, 18 games. They're all top 100 teams. So I don't know if DePaul's going to even go 500 in the Big East, but it's a nice story right now. Jalen Coleman lands the only senior in the rotation. So I think this could be the start of a nice trend, not just a one-year thing. And Charlie Moore, his third school in 4 years, he's arguably the best player in America under 6 feet tall.
Absolutely. Although I am going to disagree with you. I don't think Providence will be a top 100 team by the time we get there. I think it'll be 16 top 100 teams. As you see out there on the screen also, the Big East, Big 12 battle series, I think they're calling it, is underway. It's going to go for two more weeks, but the Big East actually won the first four games, David. Finally suffered a loss last night with Iowa State taking down Seton Hall. And Seton Hall suffered a lot more than that, as Sandro, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name,
Mamu Kalesha-Vili,
suffered what appears, apparently from what I'm hearing from Kevin Willard, was a broken bone. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah, big loss for Seton Hall.
Yeah, real big loss for them. But again, like they do get him back, and they'll get him back for a lot of crucial games. So maybe they can keep their heads above water in the meantime. But, you know, about a week or two ago, we were talking about what a slow start the Big East kind of got off to, but they had a hell of a week, you know, winning four of the games against the Big 12, Butler remaining undefeated. The only real notable loss was, aside from Seton Hall at Iowa State, was the DePaul loss to Buffalo. But other than that, the conference really taking care of business. You know,
look at all that blue over there.
So. Yeah, and Butler getting a big win against Florida and looking impressive. I know they were at home, but wow. And then how about the Johnnies beating the West Virginia team that everyone except Chad seems to like? So kind of a nice deal for them. You know, Creighton knocking off the school that Tim Miles used to coach at.
and of course, Georgetown with the addition by subtraction there.
Going and getting two wins against teams that were undefeated when Georgetown beat them. So a real good week for the Big East.
And of course, Sleeka, there's your Xavier Musketeers who picked up the win over Cincinnati in the crosstown shootout there.
Yeah, but this year, though, that's probably going to be towards the bottom of the wins this week, because Cincinnati, quite frankly, hasn't looked that impressive this year, and that would have been a bad loss for a Xavier team that really doesn't have too much meat on the bone other than a win against UConn right now.
Yeah, and only the game coming up this week that you already teased. You want to give us a little preview of the Wake Forest game?
Yep, this is going to be the Skip Prosser Classic, which in recent years has been 2 years home and home on campus, followed by a two-year hiatus, and this year it's going to resume down at the Lawrence Jewell Coliseum down in Winston-Salem. So still a winnable game for Xavier, although Wake has been a little bit feisty at home, but came up short against NC State on Sunday.
Yeah, and we mentioned earlier that, you know, tomorrow is the Jimmy V Classic. But, David, I think the biggest game on the schedule is actually the Butler-Baylor game tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the Jimmy V Classic is a big deal, but that one, that Butler-Baylor game, unbeaten Butler really, like, surpassing all expectations and looking good. Like, this is going to be their biggest test of the year, and it's just, like, how good can they be? And it's a big game for Baylor as well, who's already put together some big wins of their own. So,
let's go jump over to the Big 12. Speaking of Baylor, Baylor looking really good here at 7-1 on the season. You see them number 11 in the polls, the borderline of cracking to the top 10. And I think they, along with Kansas, are looking like the two best teams in this conference. Titel, would you agree with me?
Reluctantly, yes. Mm-hmm. My Wildcats were dead and buried. Thankfully, they fought back and only lost by 5 on Saturday. Baylor, all they do is beat Wildcats. They beat Villanova right before Thanksgiving. Now they're beating Arizona. They're undefeated in the contiguous 48 states. Their only loss, Alaska, to Washington by 3 last month. Huge game on Tuesday with Butler coming to Waco. Still not sure how they're going to get done. They don't block a lot of shots. They're not veteran savvy. They only got one senior starter in Freddie Gillespie. Jared Butler, he's quietly turning into one of the best players in the conference. I couldn't pick him out of a lineup last year. He's playing great.
He is. And Stalika, very quietly, I think almost Texas is 8-1. Were we expecting this from them?
Yes. No,
we weren't sure what to expect out of Texas.
One of us liked them. Who was that?
I didn't ask you, David. Slika, please go ahead.
But strangely enough, this is actually the best start that the Horns have had under Shaka Smart right here. And here getting a nice under-the-radar-ish win against UAB and also getting a win against Texas A&M up in Fort Worth. But not terribly eye-pleasing, but nonetheless, two wins are two wins.
Yeah, David, when you look at the rest of the conference here, you look at Texas Tech, currently according to overall record, dead last, coming off of being in the national championship game, albeit these three losses in a row for the Red Raiders, with their best player Ramsey out, and he's questionable for tomorrow night as well.
Yeah, now if they win tomorrow, I think the perspective of
especially if they win without Ramsey,
yeah, we'll start to improve. I think that would change the complexion of the whole season, but they'll have other chances. I keep waiting for them to get their motor going, but they haven't really yet. But yeah, one of the teams that's kind of struggled. K-State also really disappointing, a team that I thought would be better. I know that they lost some key players, but I thought they had enough back to where they'd be better than what they are.
Well, this might be another league, just like the Big East, Tytel, where you've got 18 or maybe with TCU 16 top 100 games in conference play.
It's really amazing that we talk about the Big 12 as one of, if not the best conference every year. But to have the switch, like I remember when Shaka was missing the tournament, now he's like a Georgetown loss away from being undefeated. I remember last year Bob Huggins had a horrible West Virginia team. He was losing guys left and right to suspension and transfer. They lost 21 games. Now they're 7-1. I mean, it's really a nice turnaround for the whole conference.
It really is. And you know, there's a lot to go here still, and conference play is going to sort these teams out. But I can make a case for 9 out of 10 teams that they're going to be a tournament team at the end of the year right now from what I've seen. And just, you know, I think, again, you probably look at the conference, David, that's going to be the number one rated conference at the end of the year.
Probably so, yeah.
All right. Let's jump over to the SEC where – if we get some,
can we jump over to the SEC, Chad? Can we get the SEC?
Well, David, how about Auburn? 8-0, number 12/ number 10, along with Kentucky, right up there in the top 10, at least in the coaches' poll. And how about Bruce Pearl's team?
Okay, I like them. Let me start with that. They've certainly. I mean, you can't do any better than 8-0. I will say that they've done some moderate lifting, but really not any super heavy lifting yet. And they have struggled with teams that, while good, Furman in particular, South Alabama, you know, have they done anything that the teams ranked around them wouldn't have also been able to do? Basically what I'm saying, I'm not trying to dog them. I think that their best wins and their best credentials are yet to come. I think Auburn is for real. How can you not? They were in the Final Four last year. Arkansas, I'm not nearly as big on. At 8-1 there. And who else did you ask me about?
Well, I mentioned Kentucky, but Tytel, what about this Arkansas team here, though? He mentioned 8-1, the loss to Western Kentucky, who actually had a real – despite winning the game, probably lost with Charles Bassey going down for the season. But how about Arkansas?
Yes, I got to give Coach Eric Musselman a ton of credit coming in there, and he's taking over Mike Anderson's players, and he's getting it done. Obviously, not the greatest strength of schedule. His biggest win so far is overtime by one against Georgia Tech. Losing to Western Kentucky, not great, but the fact that he's even got this game on his schedule, obviously he didn't make the schedule. It was set before him. He even got there. But to be going to Bowling Green, Kentucky, and playing a good mid-major team is something that not a lot of teams will do. So a lot of credit to Coach Musselman. They're making free throws 78% a game. They defend the three so great. Number two in the nation, you only make about 20% of your threes against them, which means they're going to be in every single game. A couple cupcakes ahead, a tough game in Indiana to finish the month. They have a lot of players who are doing great individually as well. It's not just a team effort. Isaiah Joe, the shooting guard, he's the green light winner. Nine games, he's attempted 90 threes. He just shoots and shoots and shoots. Luckily, he's making a lot of them, specifically 33%. And then Mason Jones, automatic from the free throw line. He's taken 49. He's made 46. He gets to the line. He makes them once he gets there. No freshman in the rotation. So they could also be the shortest Power 5 team I've ever seen. Five starters, 6'1 to 6'6. A power conference team. I think it's going to bite them in the butt when they face taller SEC teams like LSU and Kentucky, but so far so good.
Well, Stalico, this was actually, if you look on the wins and losses, it was probably a pretty lousy week for the SEC with no real huge wins of note. But then you throw in there Missouri losing to Charleston Southern, Arkansas losing to Western Kentucky, and this Mississippi State loss to Louisiana Tech at home.
Yeah, that would be putting it nicely to say they did not have a good week, because their best wins, quite frankly, were Missouri going to Temple and getting a win, and Vanderbilt beating a Buffalo team that's a little bit better than we thought. But by the same token, if you're losing to the Charleston Southerns of the world, that is not good.
Hey, Dave, what the hell with Missouri? You lose at home to one of the worst 15 teams in the nation, and then you go and you win at Temple. I mean,
a little bit inconsistency there from Quanzo Martin. So I like him as a coach. I was sort of thought that Mizzou might be one of those dark horses this year. Then they go and lose to Charleston Southern, and you almost completely forget about them. But they rebound against a good Temple team, getting that win. So, but all in all, the conference, I mean, I like Auburn. I like Kentucky. I like Tennessee. Now, we haven't really talked about them yet, but you look at their profile, I think their only loss was to a really good Florida State team. They have wins against VCU away from home, a couple of other good wins away from home. Profile-wise, they're really good. So I do think that, I mean, it wouldn't shock me to see Tennessee contend for a protected seed given what they've been able to do already and given how Tennessee under Rick Barnes has had a tendency to improve as the year has gone along. So I'm all in on the Vols. But,
and I think that the most interesting game in the SEC coming up this week is that Memphis at Tennessee game on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that one should be a lot of fun.
Although I guess we should also be circling Liberty at Vanderbilt, but that's a game we'll be discussing more under the radar with the undefeated Liberty Flames. But let's jump back over to the Pac-12 now. And Stalico, we started the show with the Washington talk, but we've got a few other teams here I want to discuss. And first of all, you got Colorado now at 7-1. You've also got Oregon State surprisingly at 7-1 as well. And Utah had the nice win this week with the win in the Holy War.
Yeah, winning the Holy War certainly helped, and Colorado did come back to earth a little bit with the loss to Kansas, which wasn't terribly shocking. But another team that's, I think, quietly gone 8-1, not Oregon State so much, but how about the Stanford Cardinal, because their only loss this year was actually in the closing seconds to Butler, and they've actually held their own, at least as far as home court goes.
Titel, you want to respond to them?
I'm going to follow up on that. So, okay. As John said, they were literally a Kamar Baldwin jumper away with 5 seconds left from being undefeated. 8-1, still fantastic. 3 cupcakes ahead. Then Kansas comes to Palo Alto to finish the month. I think the Jayhawks are going to win that game, but it's going to be a great one, I think. Great three-point shooting team, 41% from behind the arc. And it's not due to the senior leaders. It's due to these freshmen, Tyrell Terry and Spencer Jones, combined 46 of 94 from behind the arc as freshmen. Unbelievable. They're also getting a little lucky. Their opponent's shooting 58% from the free throw line. That's going to correct itself eventually. So enjoy it while it lasts. Not a single senior in the rotation, so next year could be even better. You have to remember, this is not a team that has a sustained success and excellence. 15-16 last year. I'm looking at Jared Haas as a very good candidate for Pac-12 Coach of the Year right now.
Yeah, I would imagine a good job there by Jared Haas. Probably the best coaching job he's done since he's been out there. Not much was expected. I thought his seat was getting really hot. But, you know, fantastic job with that team this year.
David, an interesting week ahead involving the Pac-12. First of all, Colorado with the hosting Northern Iowa and then at Colorado State. And we also got to talk about that Oregon-Michigan game coming up on Saturday, I think, as well.
Yeah, that Oregon-Michigan game is huge. Like a couple of teams that look like they could be competing for protected seeds, that is certainly a resume-building win for whoever can pull it off. What's Oregon State doing this week? Anything of note?
Oregon State.
Pine Bluff at home. Anything else?
Yeah, that's it. They're hosting Arkansas, okay. Pine Bluff. So you want to spend about 10 minutes on that game?
No, I like this Oregon State team.
Or maybe Utah, Weber State. Come on, David.
I wish they'd play somebody so I could get a chance to talk about them on this show. But we're not going to talk about Pine Bluff.
This is where we need Lee Delvecchio, because he could do an hour on Pac-12 bye games alone.
Yes, which raises the question, why would you do that? But he certainly could.
Let's stick out west and jump over to the Mountain West Conference next. And as we know that the – Mountain West Conference this year, and our coverage of them is...
We have a sponsor, don't we?
...is possibly brought to you. It may or may not be a sponsor, but by the ConExpo ConAGG 2020 in Las Vegas, Nevada, from March 10th through 14th, 2020. Register now at ConExpoConAGG.com.
All right. So that is, okay, be sure and check that out.
David, why are we discussing that?
Like you said, they might be a sponsor for the Mountain West.
So well, you know, I mean, check this event out. Look at what they've got here at this event.
Look at that. That is pretty remarkable.
I mean, if you're into whatever the heck they're doing out there, this is what's going to be done at where the Mountain West Conference tournament should have been played this year.
Yes.
Look at this big screen inside here. I mean, do you not want to be buying a tractor from them?
I don't need a tractor. I don't even have a front yard, but I'm going to buy a tractor.
Again, ConExpo Con AGG 2020, March 10th through 14th at the Thomas and Mack Center, where the Mountain West Conference tournament should have been played at that same time.
Operators are standing by.
Yes, we are doing this every week for the rest of the season.
David, let's talk seriously about San Diego State, which was very impressive and then very unimpressive simultaneously this past week.
Yeah, really sweating out a really bad San Jose State team at home, getting the win.
On
a miracle last second shot. After really having a big year. I mean, I've been big on San Diego State all year. I said I've liked them probably more than anybody else in this conference. They have a fairly decent profile. They'll get the chance to continue to add to it. But, yeah, really sweating out their conference opener at home.
They were, I believe, a 29-point underdog in this game, which would have been one of the biggest upsets in history.
We've been seeing a lot of that this year.
We also have Utah State at 9-1 and Titella, 9-2 New Mexico team here.
Huge surprise to me. I knew Paul Weir was a winner even when he was at New Mexico State, but the way he's getting it done has been really impressive to me. So only two losses, one to an undefeated Auburn team in Brooklyn, which looks fine on the resume, and then a 3-point road loss at a UTEP team who's only lost one game all year, also excusable. 9-point neutral site win over Wisconsin, looking better by the moment. This team lost 18 games last year, but they've turned things around, not by getting McDonald's All-Americans and bringing them in as freshmen and teaching them. This is all about getting transfers from big-time schools. Three starters, Jaquan Lyle, former Buckeye, Carlton Bragg, former Jayhawk, Vance Jackson, former UConn Husky. They even have major conference guys coming in off the bench. Corey Manigo from Pitt, he's an ACC guy who's coming off the bench in the Mountain West Conference and contributing to a 9-2 team. Amazing job to bring in these transfers all at once, and it's working.
Yeah, it is. And Stalico, upcoming this week, Utah State with the huge game against BYU, also in Mexico State, New Mexico game coming up.
That's going to be one of them right there. And then you look at St. Catherine going to Utah State.
Huge game there. Huge rivalry with St. Catherine. I guess San Diego State doesn't even play this week, do they?
I guess not.
And again, just in case you were wondering, the Mountain West section may or may not have been brought to you by the ConExpoConAGG 2020.
The ConExpoConAGG.
Don't forget to register now, ConExpoConAGG.com.
Right, yes.
Stalica, let me stick with you over the American Athletic Association, where Memphis is now 8-1 on the season. They took care of Bradley and a nice road win at UAB this past week.
Yeah, it was a good week for Memphis right here. And then even Wichita State actually got a nice win themselves down at Oklahoma State, where they were never seriously challenged. So good for the Shockers to also get back on the radar right here.
You want to follow up on that, Titel?
Shockers are, to nobody's shock, I hope, 8-1. They destroyed Oklahoma State on the road by 19 on Sunday. They're undefeated in the United States. Their only loss was to a 7-1 West Virginia team in the great country of Mexico. Mountaineers are the only team that scored 70 or more points against this team, so they're getting it done with defense. Very tough non-conference schedule. I remember back in the day when Wichita State would just destroy their old conference and nobody wanted to play them. Their next three, Oklahoma, VCU, and Ole Miss. It's amazing that these conference teams, big power conference teams, are starting to schedule a team like Wichita because it helps their own resume. All three of those games are in Wichita, which is even more amazing. Only one senior in the rotation. The freshman I want to talk about, Tyson Etienne. Memphis obviously has these great McDonald's All-Americans like James Wiseman and Precious Achiuwa. So there's a lot of competition for Conference Rookie of the Year in the American. I'm going with Tyson for now. His amazing bloodline. His dad, Max, played at Maryland. His uncle, you might have heard of Marcus Camby, had 17 years in the NBA. And his cousin, you might have heard of, DeAndre Jordan, is the best shooter in NBA history, career 67%. Amazing genetics for Tyson Etienne.
One other thing about this league, Chad, not a whole lot of love from the AP so far, despite SMU getting off to a much better than expected start, Wichita, who we just talked about. The only team getting votes outside of Memphis is Wichita State. Is there anybody – is this league being disrespected or like
– I was going to kind of ask that. I want to ask you that same question here because I think I see two tournament teams so far in this league. Nobody else has done anything that besides Wichita and Memphis that makes me look at them a second time.
Yeah, Houston getting on to a real disappointing start. Now, they do have chances to kind of make up for that. Cincinnati – probably not even as good as their 6-3 record indicates, but is Wichita State a team that should be in the rankings? Will they get there if they continue? I mean, if they continue to win, they certainly will. But will they continue to win in a way that will get voters to notice them? As Tytel said, this is a program with a lot of history that had one bad year, and suddenly a lot of people have forgotten about them. They're still really good.
Yeah, I mean, they pick up this Oklahoma win this weekend. I think that'll get them closer. They maybe still need a few more wins to get there, though. The other game of note in this league, UConn playing Indiana, has the second game of the Jimmy V Classic tomorrow night. A few people might be interested. I don't know if I am. But let's jump over to the A-10 here. And we'll start things off with Tytel, with one of the only eight undefeated teams remaining in the nation, now up to 8-0 with their huge dominating win over Columbia tonight. I'm talking about the La Roche Red Hawks. I mean, the Duquesne Dukes. your thoughts on them?
Finally, a good basketball team in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Who'd have thunk it? Unbelievable job by Coach Dambrot and the Dukes to be undefeated. They're getting it done a couple ways. They're making their free throws 78% from the line. They're defending the three. Teams only make 25% against them from behind the arc. They're not playing a bunch of top 100 teams. I get that. And they're not going to see any the rest of this month in non-conference play. Very young team, only one senior in the rotation. So, again, room for improvement next year. Not that they need it. They're undefeated this year. Sincere Carey could be the best point guard in the conference, only a sophomore. The guy I want to talk about, Bailey Steele, the senior big man. He's on his third team in 4 years. He's a 6'11 unicorn. He makes free throws 78% despite his height. He also does a little of everything. He's made 12 threes and 9 blocks in his 7 games off the bench coming into tonight. A 6'11 guy making threes and blocking shots for a little school called Duquesne. It might be for real, but we're not sure because they have not played anybody of note just yet.
And what's amazing is that with their new court coming in, they're splitting their games among three different venues, one of them being the home court of the Division III La Roche Red Hawks, where they were playing tonight. That was their last game at that tiny little venue tonight. But I was impressed they had the A-10 logo on the floor, along with the La Roche Red Hawk logo. We've also got the rest of their games will be split between the arena down there in Pittsburgh, as well as Robert Morris's home court.
But I think they also have some games over at, Firestone High School in Akron, but I don't know if that's technically going to be a home game or not, but possibly a fourth venue.
I think there is one game that's going to be played there as well. You're correct. David, though, beyond Duquesne, how about this Dayton team?
Yeah, looking really good. They got as high as 12 in the right day. I think that they're as good as a top 15 team. One of the, knocks on them is that they just don't have a top 15 resume the way some other teams do. They haven't really beaten a ranked team away from home. But their only loss was in overtime to Kansas, a game that they had a chance to win. And in a game, if you've watched Kansas this year, was probably the best Kansas had played. And when they've played St. Mary's and Georgia and Virginia Tech and these NIT-ish or NCAA caliber teams, they've rolled over them the way you would expect the top 15 team to do it. This is a really good Dayton team. They got a big one coming up against Colorado, I believe, Saturday. That's going to be a lot of fun. Or is it it's a week from Saturday.
Their only game, the Dayton's only game this week, I believe, is a home game against Drake on Saturday, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, kind of some garbage coming up. But, yeah, really good. Every game on the schedule that they have left seems to be winnable. I think they're going to rack up a huge record. I don't know, what do you do with a team that has all those wins but only, you know, a smattering of top 40 or top 50 wins? But I don't think it really matters. I think they're protected seed good. I really do.
Stalika, you want to discuss both St. Joe's Temple? Also, by way of note, that Duquesne-Radford game on Saturday, I believe that's the one being played at that high school gym in Akron. But go ahead,
yeah, Stalika. Firestone High School. But we also have to highlight at least one of the Big Five matchups right here, and this will be one that's become more famous for the funeral of the Hawk right here in recent years.
Well, John, let me stick with you, though. There's a few other teams here with some solid records. George Mason, Richmond, St. Louis, all one loss only. Of course, we've got to mention VCU, who's just fell out, just barely out of the top 25. You know, is this a two-bid league? Is it a more than two-bid league? Is it possible still?
I think it could be three bids, considering how the conference tournament could break out. But I do think both VCU and Dayton are eventually going to be on track, at least as far as at-larges go. I know VCU had a bit of a rough weekend down at the Emerald Coast Classic, and even St. Louis had a nice win against Tulane, at least as far as some of the metrics go.
That's a statement about Tulane when you call a win over them a nice win. That's a real statement about how things have turned around in that program there. But go ahead.
I was going to say Richmond is the other team that we've also been keeping our eye on.
Right, and another interesting game here on Saturday, also the St. Louis-Auburn game. I think that's one to keep a real serious look on, find out just if the St. Louis team is any good or if it's just been a bit of a fluke that they're 8-1. I guess on that note, then, I think that's all 10 conferences we want to discuss. Let me go ahead and pull this down and run through each of you for any other final thoughts of the night. And Sleeka, you want to start us off?
I feel like I should be giving Titel credit for this because this actually popped up in the chat right here. There actually was one team that actually got two very notable wins in the SEC, but it was not an SEC team. It was the Butler Bulldogs, who started the party with the win at Ole Miss midweek, and then on Saturday fell behind a little bit early against Florida, but dominated the second half and ended up beating the Gators quite nicely. So that'll lead into their big game this week coming up at Baylor.
Yeah, best team in the SEC and best team in the Big East, Titel.
Thank you for the shout-out, John. I feel obligated to talk about Georgetown just because they're my local team, and I wanted to talk about all the bad stuff, which looked like it, especially when you're losing at home to UNC Greensboro over Thanksgiving weekend. Thankfully, I was out of town and missed it. But we have to give them some props because, number one, I think Coach Ewing did the right thing by getting rid of guys who are not adhering to the program's high standards. Number two, my shout out is to Mac McClung. This is a kid, he's had an up and down season. He only had 6 in the neutral site loss to Duke. He only had 9 in the loss to Greensboro, and he could have just thrown in the towel. Instead, he comes back. They go on the road against a pair of previously undefeated teams. He scores 33 at Oklahoma State, nails 4 threes. Goes to SMU and scores 19, including 5 threes and a career-high 7 assists. I mentioned addition by subtraction before. It really is, but the fact that they didn't subtract a guy like Mac McClung, who not only was the Big East Player of the Week last week, but Andy Katz named him his National Player of the Week, which I kind of am incredulous about, but he is. Like, he's kind of single-handedly saving this team. I know he's got Omar Yurt 7, the big man. He's got Devon Blair coming off the bench to tie the school record for threes. But the fact that Georgetown is hanging in there is a credit to Coach Ewing and to great players like Mac McClung.
It's absolutely amazing, especially with Akinjo gone, that this team did what they did this week. And we'll see if they keep it going, but no reason they couldn't from what we've seen. David, you're up.
One of the things we just talked about, like one of the stories, just to kind of recap, is Duquesne. It isn't just that they're undefeated. It's that it's a program with virtually no history at all, at least not within the 64-team era and maybe further back than that, that's getting off to a really good start. And they're doing it despite not having a regular home court. Now, I know they're also doing it against a load of cupcakes and cookies and all this stuff that's easy to eat. But in the past, these were teams that Duquesne didn't always beat anyway. I really wish they would have challenged themselves a little bit more because we don't really know how good they actually are. Nothing they've done, despite the fact that they've won all their games, warrants NCAA tournament talk yet. But you have to admit that what Keith Dambrot has done in the time that he's been there has been huge improvements. I think that they're doing the right thing. In a sense, I think that playing a weaker schedule for a program that's not used to winning, at least for a couple years, is a good idea, just so they know what it feels like to win games against anyone. But it's one of the stories. They were kind of one of our dark horses that we identified as early as October on our preseason podcast. And it's going to be kind of fun to watch what they can do when they get in the conference play.
Absolutely, it is. You know, then they've got nothing left of any significant note before conference play either.
Yeah.
A trip to Marshall, I don't know. But I guess on that note, I do want to just mention one other thing. Every year here at Hoops HD, at the end of the year, we award our Centenary Award to the worst team in Division One. I just want to throw out there right now, it is December 9th. It's about 10 o'clock p.m. And I would like to officially nominate the Philadelphia Eagles for that award. But on that note, on behalf of David Griggs, John Salica, and John Titel, I'm Chad Sherwood. Have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon.